prepared by Sue Ann Zollinger with help from Alice Fly in Applied Health Science. I'm Yael Cassander.
It's 2:40 in sports. Las Vegas sportsbooks are listing the New York Giants as 2-1 favorites to repeat as Super Bowl champions. The Tennessee Titans are the favorite among AFC teams to win a title at 4-1. Three NFL coaches lost their jobs today. Detroit dumped Rod Marinelli, Cleveland canned Romeo Crennel, and the New York Jets fired Eric Mangini. The college football postseason continues with two games on today's schedule. This afternoon at 6-6 North Carolina State facing 7-5 Rutgers in the PapaJohns.com Bowl. While tonight in San Antonio, it will be 9-3 Northwestern versus 9-4 Missouri in the Alamo Bowl. Undefeated North Carolina remains a unanimous number one in the AP men's basketball poll out today. Connecticut, Pittsburgh, Oklahoma, Duke, and Wake Forest hold second through sixth, respectively. Notre Dame, Texas, Purdue, and Michigan State all move up one spot to round out the top 10. Missouri, which moved in at number 25 last week for the first time in 5 years, then lost 75-59 to Illinois, was the only team to drop out of the rankings this week. Illinois is getting ready to open Big Ten play at Purdue on Tuesday. Tomorrow, an Illini basketball coach, Bruce Weber, says his team could finish this season near the top of the conference. Weber told reporters today that that's a big change from his expectations at the beginning of this season. The Illini open play just hoping to be better than last year's 16-19 disappointment. The men defeated Eastern Michigan yesterday, 62-53. The Illinois women host Wisconsin on the 1st of January, New Year's Day. They fell to Penn State yesterday despite leading most of the way. The score, 54-51. That's sports.
WILL programming is made possible by Tires Plus Total Car Care, located at Prospect and Market View in Champaign. Tires Plus provides complete car repair and maintenance. More information is available at 366-3201.
Around-the-clock cleanup operations continue today in Kingston, Tennessee, the site of a major spill of coal ash. The ash sludge broke through an earthen dam at the Tennessee Valley Authority's coal-burning power plant last week. The ash covers some 300 acres, including a river and a small lake. More from NPR reporter Tamara Keith.
Coal ash, or fly ash, is a byproduct of coal power production. The stuff that doesn't go out through the smokestack, and it has to be stored somewhere. Before the spill, the coal ash was piled behind a retaining wall, like a mountain of ash, some 55 feet high, with a 40-acre footprint. Ron Hall is the plant manager at TVA's Kingston Fossil Plant.
Yeah, we've got a lot to deal with here, but it's contained, and we've got the resources on board working 24/7 to get it addressed.
More than 60 pieces of heavy machinery worked over the weekend. TVA officials estimate 5.4 million cubic yards of ash and other material spilled out. That's one big mess to clean up. Right now, Hall says there are about 20 dump trucks constantly hauling away soupy ash sludge and solid waste.
Right now, in order to facilitate getting it out of the way, we're actually pushing it back on the original pile. We're leaving a buffer, and we're doing a temporary dock arrangement so it can't get back out.
At least temporarily, TVA is essentially rebuilding the mountain of ash. Many in the environmental community have argued this type of coal ash storage shouldn't be allowed because they say it's prone to failure. Activist Dave Cooper drove in from Kentucky to volunteer with a local group called United Mountain Defense. He doesn't think it's a good idea to just return the coal ash to the mound where it came from.
That's not a solution. That's the problem. That's how we got in this mess in the first place.
When asked what should be done with the coal ash, Cooper is stumped.
There's millions and millions and millions of gallons of this stuff. Where are you going to put it? It may be a problem without a solution.
Glenn Birdwell will be involved in deciding what happens to all the ash. He's deputy director for the Division of Solid Waste Management for the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation. He oversees all of the landfills in the state, including the coal ash pile at the Kingston Power Plant, which is technically a Class 2 industrial waste landfill.
The facility itself goes way back to the mid-1950s. So this generation of ash was in existence long before regulations.
Regulation of landfills like this one didn't start in Tennessee until 1993, and the Kingston facility was grandfathered in. But any future ash disposal will be regulated by the state, and Birdwell says that includes the ash that spilled.
What they said and how they said it was going to be constructed is now gone, so it'll have to be a change in engineering drawings on how it's to be permitted and where it's supposed to go.
But before any decisions are made, Birdwell says more information is needed. At this point, no one even knows why or how the spill happened, and that could influence how coal ash is stored in the future at the Kingston Power Plant and beyond. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
A study published this month in the journal Pediatrics found a wide variation in what pediatricians and family practitioners pay for vaccines. It also found a wide variation in the reimbursements they receive from insurers and managed care organizations. NPR's Brenda Wilson reports.
When New Jersey pediatrician Dr. Richard Lander started out 26 years ago, giving children shots was pretty simple.
There were probably half a dozen vaccines that we gave. The vaccine manufacturer charged me X dollars. I charged my patients Y dollars. They paid and they submitted to all insurance companies.
These days, children will get more than 20 vaccines by the time they are 18 at a cost of about $1,500. It can seem simple, a routine visit to the pediatrician for 20-month-old twins, Dominique and Angelina, who have come for polio and influenza shots. But first, a wriggling Dominique has to submit to a well child visit with one of Dr. Lander's partners, Dr. Ami Mehta.
Hi there, Dominic. Can we take a listen to you? I know, buddy. I'm sorry.
There's a fee for the well child visit, the vaccine, and a fee for administering the vaccine.
We will bill for the vaccine we've administered, and we will bill for the vaccine administration fee. Many managed care organizations will say, why are you so interested in getting paid more for the vaccine administration fee? Look how well I pay you for the vaccine. We're talking about a product, we're talking about a service. Don't pay me for one and not pay me for the other.
But not all pediatricians and family practitioners pay such close attention to the practice as a business. Dr. Gary Freed of the University of Michigan Health Systems recently conducted the study in pediatrics. He surveyed pediatricians and family practitioners in 76 private practices across the country.
We found some physicians who, quite honestly, didn't know what they were paying for vaccines and had to dig up records to figure that out.
Many physicians were, in fact, losing money on childhood immunizations.
It turns out that some physicians were paying over three times what other physicians were for the exact same vaccine. By the same token, we found that some physicians were being reimbursed more than twice as much as other physicians for the exact same vaccine.
There are a host of expenses associated with childhood immunizations. Administrative costs for the time it takes to order and stock the vaccines, the cost of refrigerators to store vaccines, electricity, and insurance.
Some of these vaccines cost over $100 a dose. And if you're thinking about stocking, 60 to 100 doses in your practice, that's a significant capital outlay while you're waiting to get reimbursed from anywhere from 30 to 90 days.
And another survey of more than 1,000 pediatricians and family practitioners in the same issue, at least a fifth of family practitioners say they can no longer afford to vaccinate children, which can be a problem particularly in rural areas of the country where there are often no alternatives. Only a few pediatricians say they are considering not vaccinating, but 40% of them feel inadequately paid by insurers. That includes the government, the largest purchaser of vaccines, which provides them for free for children who are not insured. But the government pays only a nominal fee for administering the vaccines. Susan Pisano, a spokesperson for America's Health Insurance Plans, an advocacy group for health insurers, says private insurers are being asked to pick up the government slack.
What has happened is because government, Medicare and Medicaid, typically pays providers, doctors and hospitals, less, those doctors and hospitals have been expecting greater payment from employer-sponsored plans. that cost shift probably amounts to about 10% of my premium and your premium.
Most doctors and pediatricians, she says, are operating at a profit, and employers and consumers should not have to pay for the inefficient ones. To reduce his costs, Richard Lander, who's chairman of the American Academy of Pediatrics Committee on Practice Management, started a group purchasing organization for doctors to buy vaccines at a discount. But he says he's still losing money on insurers. One insurer wanted to pay him even less than the federal government does.
They were unwilling to give a better payment, and I decided to drop the company. I couldn't bear any more to be paid so poorly.
And if more pediatricians and primary care physicians stood up to insurers, Lander says, they wouldn't be the poorest paid in the medical profession. Currently, insurers and pediatricians and family practitioners are discussing how to remedy the situation. Brenda Wilson, NPR News.
It's 2:51. The Detroit Lions have dismissed head coach Rod Marinelli following the league's first 0-16 campaign. Marinelli went 10-38 in three seasons at the helm of the Motor City franchise. The Lions' season ended yesterday with a 31-21 loss to the Packers in Green Bay. NPR's Tom Goldman has the story.
When a team hasn't won a game all season, it's a bit of a challenge to find the fans. It's not like every sports bar in the Detroit area was teeming yesterday with people proudly wearing Lions blue, silver, and white. Word was we might have a shot at Nemo's Bar and Grill in downtown Detroit, but when we showed up a little after kickoff, the place was dead. So we drove on and kept tabs on the game.
Now you're looking at second and 13 from there.
Early in the second half, it got interesting. After a season of numbing losses, magnified, of course, by hometown Detroit's economic slump, the Lions were showing some fight.
Orlovsky from the shotgun. Sets the look. Throws got Calvin at the 10. Out of a tackle at the 5. Diving. End zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. How about that young man?
It was 14-all as we walked into Excalibur Park Bar in Grosse Pointe Park and hit pay dirt. Greeted by a cloud of cigarette smoke and noisy chatter, the bar was hopping, in part because a local power outage had forced Lions fans out of their houses and into the bar, which had a couple of big screen TVs going on generator power. 26-year-old Marco Mascheri was getting a jolt of his own, watching the Lions stay close to Green Bay.
Sometimes you see bonehead grade school mistakes that inevitably leads you to realize that this team could not succeed under any circumstance, but some guys play hard. They do play, a lot of them somehow, in spite of it all, play hard, play their hearts out, and do make the stop. The question is, can they keep doing it? Let's watch.
Stop them, get them, get them!
And, right on cue.
Right on cue, the Lions failed to stop the Packers, who took a 24-14 lead. Detroit made it 24-21 before Green Bay scored a final touchdown for the win. In case you can't tell, that cheering as the clock ran out was dripping with sarcasm. One bar patron proclaimed the Lions a loser powerhouse. Back in 2001, Detroit hired former player Matt Millen as president. He had no experience running a team. During his tenure, the Lions had the NFL's worst winning percentage. He was finally removed this season, which appeased angry fans. After yesterday's loss, though, there were more calls for cleaning house, from the longtime owner, William Clay Ford Sr., to other top Lions executives who Ford recently said he'd retain. But at least one person at Excalibur Park was pleased with the outcome. Aaron Rentenbach said a perfect season in reverse means it's not going to get any worse.
No matter what happens, the Lions have bottomed out. And I kind of feel like with the way the economy is going and everything that's going on globally, this is just very poetic, and it's all going to be on the up and up in 09.
Rentenbach is a Detroit native, but now lives in Los Angeles, which probably explains her rosy optimism. L.A., by the way, no longer has an NFL team. At least Detroiters still can boast that they do. Kinda. Tom Goldman, NPR News, Detroit.
Attention, big TV star at work.
Do you like parties?
For toddlers, this is as big as it gets. Caitlin Sanchez, the new voice of Dora the Explorer.
Dora has a great heart, and she's sweet and subtle, and Dora has many different colors.
Sanchez is 12. She acts. She plays Thelonious Monk. You can meet her today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 p.m.
Earth and Sky.
Monday, December 29th, 2008. The first star to pop into view tonight is no star at all, but the blazing planet Venus.
And there are also two other planets up after sunset. At dusk and early evening, look for Venus first. It's the brightest point of light in all the heavens in the general direction of the sunset.
No matter where you live worldwide, you should have little trouble spotting Venus at dusk and early evening. The trick is to catch Venus early. This world sets about 3.5 hours after the sun at mid-northern latitudes and 2.5 hours after the sun at mid-southern latitudes. If you catch Venus early enough, say 20 to 40 minutes after sunset, you have a good chance of spotting the gorgeous pairing of the thin waxing crescent moon and another planet, brilliant Jupiter, near the horizon.
The moon and Jupiter are up barely an hour after sunset, but the beauty of the scene will be worth the effort to locate them. If your sky is clear, you'll also see a third planet, Mercury, nearby.
Better yet, zoom in on the elusive evening trio, the moon, Jupiter, and Mercury, with binoculars. They'll be far below brilliant Venus, right next to the horizon, at dusk and early evening, just waiting for you to spot them. That's today's show. I'm Joel Block.
And I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Provena Covenant Medical Center's Human Motion Institute, offering a wide array of orthopedic, musculoskeletal, and rehabilitation services. The HMI goal is to return patients to normal function as quickly and safely as possible. Learn more at 1-800-245-6697.
It's 46 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois at 3 minutes before 3 o'clock. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft, our technical director. Dan Pounder's forecast for Illinois and Indiana for the remainder of the afternoon, mostly sunny and breezy, highs ranging from 39 in the north to 54 in the south. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows ranging from 22 north to 33 south. Tomorrow, in northern areas, increasing cloudiness with a chance of light snow and flurries late. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny and windy, highs ranging from 34 in the north to 56 in the south. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, sunny and breezy, the high 48, the wind out of the west at 12 to 24.